Nalema kulila misozi, nikayanga na banja latu. Kupadwa tinabadwa mushe, koma lelo lipazulika. Nikale, tinakalapo kondwela. Lelo heka, tutikumbukila kweta chokela. Amai kubutika mutima, koma zoti tazisoa. Nimaona misozi masomu wake. Ni mafuto wabale ni mafuto. Nako kuipirendi kuchitoko na mumu follow hamama inei iziwani.
Good morning, it's December 1st. Amazing, just amazing that we are able to say December. I thought we just said Happy New Year a few weeks ago, and it's an exciting day. We are beginning to count down the year 2018. Welcome to Zambia Block Talk Radio, this first show in the month of December. As we begin to count down, it's 8:01 in Central Standard Time, Dallas, Texas, 9:01 in the East Coast. I believe it's about 1600 hours in Zambia. Good afternoon, Europe. Good evening, Western Australia and the Pacific. And welcome to the show. Zambia is in the house. Roger.
Zambia is in the house, my brother.
where is my big mango?
Oh, just wait. Just wait.
You know what I missed about this time?
Big mango. Last day of my coming, that's when I tasted mango.
Really?
Totally
different from what you eat from the supermarket, right?
Oh, without a doubt. Without a doubt.
Without a doubt. Yeah. Hi, Dr. Pat.
Good morning. How are you?
Doing fine. I was just telling somebody here that Zambia is in the house. Guess who's back? Guess who's back, Dr. Pat?
He said who?
Good morning, my
back?
Brother.
Good morning, Dr. Pat. It's good to be back.
wonderful.
Yeah. I have every input you want. I've got it here with me.
Ulishani.
We know, doctor. We know, Ulishani.
All right, excellent. Like I said, it's 1st December. Amazing how the year has flown by. We've begun the countdown of 2018. Today we have a loaded show, very serious subjects. And the first segment in this one, we are talking to two great, dynamic, passionate, every word you can think of, ladies in the UK. Roger, we love having guests from UK because UK has got one of our greatest number of listeners, and we're very excited. In the second hour, on top of the hour, we are going to go to Zambia and speak to Mr. Chirusha Tayari. He's not a stranger. We'll just try to deal with some of the political issues there. Okay, joining us this morning is Miss Margaret Buta. She's not a stranger to this forum. She's been here, and you all remember she was elected first Zambian to be Councillor of North Richmond Ward, 2014-18, and she's the author of a book. We also talked to her about it when she came here, about the Prophet Lenshina and her legacy and everything. And also with Miss Buta is Nomsa Dube, a wildlife She's also a wildlife conservationist, and she also is part of a team of people who are trying to advocate and activist to do with the Zimbabwe car for baby elephants. And some of these things, we tend to take them very, you know, we just gloss over them. But this morning, Dr. Patrick, I thought that when I saw this, Ms. Margaret posted something on our wall, and I read it, and I was like, I think this deserves attention. Well, Margaret, good afternoon. Welcome.
Yes, good afternoon, Nathan.
Thank you for joining us. Ms. Norma, good afternoon. I was trying to remember the Zimbabwe word for saying welcome or good morning, but I couldn't find it.
it's good morning. It's Livuke Njani.
No, no, okay, that already passed me. Welcome, Ms. Nomsa, and it's good to have you both ladies.
Thank you very
much. Now, Roger, this is the question, and anybody who is black, whether you live here, you are African American, you are in Europe, you are in Australia, there's one question I want you both to answer. This issue to do with wildlife conservation is not the black one African thing. What in the world did Norma, what drove you to this point, Norma, to get involved in this? And then Ms. Margaret, you can also respond.
For me, to start off with me, thank you very much, Nathan. For me, it was, you know, basically growing up in Zimbabwe, you're sort of like surrounded mm-hmm. with wildlife. And for me, I got very passionate with, especially with elephants, because I had seen how, with time, I had seen how they were interacting in the wild, you know, as a family, because mm-hmm. they are very family-oriented. So for me, that drew me in to sort of like getting to know a lot more about them, and also reading books that were
yes.
written by lots of different conservationists as well. So that drew me into elephants to sort of like learn about their social system, how they interact as a family, and they're just like us. So for me, that mm-hmm. that passion started from there when I was little, growing up surrounded by wildlife in Zimbabwe.
Yeah, that's okay. Really fantastic. And as for me, Nathan, Mulishani, very well, Zambian, saying hello to everybody listening as well. And thank you so much, Nathan, for this time to talk about such an important topic. Well, I always loved wildlife. My dad used to take us, actually, to see wildlife, you know, when we lived in Livingstone at some point, and also we went to Victoria Falls. But my passion really grew when I was interning for international youth travel, and I took European tourists on safari. But that youth travel agency that was started by Mr. Emmanuel Chileshikainga, he was a visionary, a pioneer, was not only to take tourists to see wildlife, but also the youth in Zambia to interact with other African countries. And I took some of them to Swaziland as well, so that we could also see the tourism, what our countries have to offer. But wildlife has always been a passion for me. It's not just one particular one. I love the big five, but we've also got to consider that through that wildlife, there are zebras, there are other animals as well that need our attention. The big five are the draw cards for tourism, and that's fantastic. And I know that later on we will bring up the topic of trophy hunting. But at the moment, yes, wildlife is fantastic. And I think, you know, Nathan, when I was really thinking about it, we were desensitized to wildlife as young children because of the stories we were told. I've collected over 20 fairy tales concerning wildlife from people, you know, speaking to people in Zambia. And some of them are quite macabre. They never really end in a good way. But, you know, as a child, you're listening to stories. They're telling you about the elephants, the lions, Kalulu. That was the hair, you know, and it was always, there was always something disturbing about those stories, even the ones I collected. And I said I would change them to make them positive. But in a way, the songs that were sung were fantastic. You know, I loved listening to that. And we would interact, behave like elephants as well with my sisters. Of course, we had dolls. We had other toys to play with. But for me, the wildlife part of our growing up, the song, you know, that even the maids told us, aunties, whatever, people visiting, that for me was just fantastic.
Excellent. Very well said, ladies. Why do we have this notion that wild animals or wildlife is just good for bushmeat? And why don't we look at wildlife as national treasure or assets like copper, gold, the minerals, and other things? What is our problem there, Nomsa? Why is wildlife just good for bushmeat?
I think the thing is, it's sort of like, you know, when people are growing up, I think there is not enough. I think we need to start from a grassroots education. We need to start educating people about the importance of wildlife, because if people are not educated enough about the importance of wildlife, then they would just treat wildlife as just a commodity. But and yet, wildlife is quite a very, you know, it's a very big thing that can bring in tourism into the country. It's a tourism brand, and it should be treated with such that it is a tourism brand. And people need to start from like grassroots education. And I think for me, I believe it should be done as a complementary subject in school, to start from teaching kids in school about wildlife, because it is a very important part of our heritage, and we need to embrace that and start learning a lot more about wildlife.
You can respond. Let me also throw this to you. You can address both questions. To what extent does our education curriculum address this? You can respond whichever way, from Nomsa's point, and then go to my question.
All right, fantastic. Thank you. Well, with education, it is important to start teaching young people from a very, about the value of wildlife. But also, it's important to feed it into the curriculum. You know, Nathan, when I went to study journalism, we had our socioeconomics lecturer who spoke about wildlife, but his viewpoint actually really was quite disturbing when he said, why should he, as a Zambian person, go on safari and look at wildlife and say, oh, there's a lion, there's an elephant, there's a whatever, and spend his money doing that? And I thought, look, you're looking at it in the wrong perspective. You should look at it as having a business, starting an enterprise. Yeah, that will bring in people to go and look at what is actually on your doorstep, rather than mocking it and looking at it as something that is not of value. And that's where Nomsa's point was quite important about education, you know, bringing it in now for the young people to actually have fun with it, not just to understand the value, but to enjoy the interaction that animals can bring, because it helps emotionally as well. And now with the world, I mean, there are so many people with mental health issues. Animals can be quite therapeutic because they're innocent.
Yes.
They're sentient. They have feelings. And if, you know, if you have a wildlife and you can interact with it and enjoy it, it's very, very therapeutic emotionally. That's why we need our wildlife to survive on many levels, not just for our ecosystems, but for education as well. So your question was about how do we bring it in? Well, through stories, you know, through books, through, you know, I met a Zambian lady who said she had over 200 unpublished stories from her mother, who was a teacher way back in just after colonialism. She collected stories about wildlife, and she never did anything with them. 200 unpublished stories. That is an atrocity.
Wow.
It's so easy to publish books, feed them back into the curriculum, give something back, something you know that is valuable. That's how it can be achieved.
And also, I think to add on to what Margaret is saying, we need as well, like, these amazing organizations in Zimbabwe that are doing, like, helping school kids actually go, like physically go into the bush. So it's like it's done as a subject. So they physically go out into the bush as a subject, and they learn about wildlife, how wildlife interact, different types of wildlife. So that's how they are trying to bring that in, with school kids actually going into the bush and experiencing wildlife out in the bush. And also the other thing as well, I think it's bringing in communities, because communities, all they want is to be involved in wildlife. So once you sort of like educate the communities, we start from there, educating the communities, because they are the ones that have to live with wildlife every single day. So if we start from educating local communities and then emphasizing on how important it is having wildlife around, then at least if they feel valued and feel as if they are part of that, and then they can embrace it. And then I think in that way we can sort of like reduce all this like poaching, because at the moment there isn't enough knowledge within local communities. That's why some of them, they end up deferring to poaching instead of actually embracing, you know, wildlife as a, you know, as part of our heritage.
That's what we don't seem to understand, to say as part of our heritage, because, I mean, I'll be very honest, since I started conversing with you ladies about this subject, I realized one thing to say. It's very interesting that even the way we treat dogs in our homes, it also speaks volumes to how we generally look at animals. And it's very interesting. To the business component of wildlife, this is really big in Zimbabwe, Zambia itself, South Africa, Namibia. There's a certain trend that I see, Norma and Miss Margaret, either one of you can both, or whichever way. Most safari tour companies are owned by foreigners. I think that picture doesn't paint a very good, it's not a very good picture about our cultures, our country. Why are almost all safari companies owned by foreigners, if I may say that?
Well, I would answer that, Nathan. That's a really key question, because wildlife tourism is a $34 billion industry. That's how much revenue is being brought in through this industry. And as Africans who live in these countries, very, very few people are part of that industry. Very few are profiting. You are right. But you cannot just put the responsibility on the foreigners who have seen the loophole and have seen the trade, while the people in these countries have not woken up to this fact. They also have the responsibility to now wake up and start owning some of these businesses. We have savvy business people. They're entrepreneurs in Zambia, people who have the mindset, who want to make it as well. They have been looking at other components of industry like mining, agriculture, and forgotten about the wildlife trade. You know, somebody told us that there was an expo here on tourism in London a few weeks ago, and they went there as a black person. They did not see any black person advertising their business at this expo. That is an
That's what we are saying, Margaret. Yeah, that's
You're
exactly
right.
The point there.
You are right. That's why, you know, my passion is to see people start to thrive in something that is actually on their doorstep. Yeah, to start getting into these industries. We have the mindset, we have the capacity, and we have people not just in Zambia. I mean, people can liaise with people in the diaspora in Zambia. You start doing something together. And because it's done by indigenous people, I'm telling you, it will be something so powerful, so amazing. Why? Because the knowledge is there. I mean, talk about communities. I receive a lot of direct messages on Twitter, on other platforms as well, from Africans who are into conservation. And they say that actually they have a lot of knowledge that is being disregarded in terms of how to deal with the wildlife, and it's not being harnessed. And this is knowledge that has been passed down from their ancestors. And that is true. Now, can you imagine if somebody could bring out that aspect of their business and say, I've got this unique selling point? Even I would go, because I want to tap into what they've got to say. It's wisdom.
Excellent. What's the situation in Zambia on this, Nomsa?
In Zambia?
In Zimbabwe.
In terms
Nomsa.
Of,
what?
In Zimbabwe, all right.
Yes.
Well,
safari
in
tours
Zimbabwe, like,
and...
In Zimbabwe, like some, because it's a bit of that one is a bit of a tough one, really. Because in Zimbabwe, like I can say, probably 3/4 of the safari parks they're owned by. That's the thing as well. We need to be careful because they're owned by Zimbabweans.
Mm-hmm.
They're owned by Zimbabweans, but the thing is, like, we sort of like we don't want to bring race or anything into it. But you know, they're owned by Zimbabweans, but they are white Zimbabweans. So, but to me, they are still Zimbabweans. They're still Zimbabweans, and
true.
You know, they're still Zimbabweans, and they have a right to own the safari, you know, the safari parks. And the problem is with us. I think as you know, as Black Africans, like I completely agree with what Margaret was saying. We need to wake up, and we need to start thinking. You know, there is. Yeah, we need to start having indigenous knowledge and also to try and learn. We need to learn to sort of like say, you know, this is a business. So let's, because a lot of people, like especially black Africans, they don't want to get into the wildlife because there's this, they've sort of like perceived, like what Margaret was saying, there's this, they've perceived that it's a, there's a lot of fear. There's a lot of fear in that because people don't want to venture into that. But in Zimbabwe, personally, you know, most of the safari parks, they are owned by Zimbabweans.
By Zimbabweans. Okay, that's good. That's good. Okay, lady, now we're going to transition slowly here to talk about the crisis that brought us to this point about the baby elephants in Zimbabwe, or the calves. I would like us to begin from this perspective. You were sharing with me about animals being put in certain categories which cannot be, what do you call it? Some are not, cannot be, what's the word? Cannot be traded, cannot be, so, cannot be hunted, cannot be traded, and things like that. Talk about that so that our listeners will be able to follow our discussion when we get to the crisis of Zimbabwe selling baby elephants.
Zimbabwe's baby elephants, I mean, it's actually a topic that is quite sad at the moment. You know, even for me, yeah, when Noma contacted me a few weeks ago, initially I just thought, oh, okay, it's got nothing to do with me. But then I thought, hang on, Margaret, these are your people too. Yeah, Zimbabwe, Zambia, Malawi, Congo, whatever, Angola, Namibia, we're all one people across Africa as well. It's not about color, and I'm talking about white, black, whatever color, creed, background you come from, we're all Africans, right? South Africa is known as a rainbow nation. So, of course, it's all inclusive, and I call it inclusive tourism. But I also call it inclusive tourism that must reach the indigenous people. Where Zimbabwe baby elephants, the atrocity that is happening is not right. There was a loophole that was created in 1997 when the Convention on International Trade in Endangered Species removed the elephants from Appendix 1 to Appendix 2 for a one-off sale of ivory tusks, because Zimbabwe had a surplus. That was correct, but that loophole wasn't closed. So after that, live animal elephants were allowed to be traded. But then the Zimbabwean authorities, the CITES authorities, which really have their own remit, they are not part of... they have their own remit to issue licenses for this live trade, are the ones who need to look at this very well and stop this trade. Stop issuing licenses to trade in Zimbabwean baby elephants, because the rules that are stipulated that these animals, from the time of capture to the time they arrive at the places where they are put in zoos or circuses, they should be rules that are followed, but they're not being followed. I mean, you have a case of these Zimbabwean, 100 baby elephants have been traded. Very few have survived. Noma will tell you the figures herself. Most of them have died. That means they cannot survive out of their own natural habitats, and that has to stop. These animals have feelings. Can you imagine a baby being snatched from its mother? It hasn't done anything to anybody. All it wants to do is to survive and to have a life like anybody and to be free, to have freedom. I mean, wars have been fought in the past. We are celebrating 100 years of Armistice Day because our freedom was secured for us by people who gave their lives, and we will always remember them. The most important thing that everybody wants in life is freedom and to live.
That's true.
These elephants do not have a voice. We are their voices. When we see this injustice happening, a baby is snatched from its mother. It just wants the chance to be free, to have freedom, to exist, to have a life, and to live in its natural habitat. But when that is taken away, and nobody is speaking up for it, licenses are being issued. We don't even know the reason why these baby elephants are being taken to these countries where animals are looked at as having medicinal purposes. That is wrong because most of it is not even true. Those are like old wives' tales that are happening. Yes, people do have health issues that are going on. Yesterday I was reading something about why tiger bones and why tigers are being used for medicine in China. Can you imagine? They take the penis of a tiger and say that that will cure impotency. There are other medicines. Yes, impotency is a bad thing. It's not a good thing for anybody to go through. And I can feel for those people who go through that, have to live with it day in, day out. But to kill a tiger, take its penis and use that to cure that kind of ailment is wrong. What is the scientific research on that that works? Why are tigers being reared in China just for that? Does it really work? You know, and these things have to be looked at by World Health Organization, who have actually sanctioned some of these herbal medicines to go out, to be brought out in from China to the world. But wildlife is being impacted and affected. That is why baby elephants are being taken to these places. We don't know if they're rearing them for the future, for their tusks, because right now there is an ivory ban that is going on and different countries are looking at it to ban it as well. We don't know what their body parts are being used for. And why are those baby elephants dying? That needs to be looked at by anybody who is into wildlife conservation. They have to have a feeling for that. It is not something we can all disregard. We are all in this together. We can look at other parts of conservation that are having an impact. The illegal wildlife trade is a billion-dollar industry, you know, the fourth after drugs, narcotics, and human trafficking as well. But what about these live trade of elephants? 30 countries a while ago, African countries, did not want the trade of live baby elephants or elephants, actually, but they were voted down by the EU and other countries as well. So that couldn't go through and have it stopped. But nothing is set in stone.
Yeah,
and
let me
can
ask
add
you,
on to that, Nathan.
Yeah, Norma, you can add on to this and say, so why baby elephants, Norma? And what are they really doing with them? Is it only Zimbabwe doing this or other African countries are doing this?
For me, as far as I know, it's only Zimbabwe doing it at the moment, because it's, and the thing is as well, like what we need to realize as well, it's not a new thing. So it's basically started like around in 1983, Zimbabwe
wow.
made conservation history. Yeah, in 1983. This trade is as old as I am. So in 1983, it's as old as I am. And in 1983, Zimbabwe made conservation history by being the first country in Africa to sell live elephants. And 62
wow.
infants were captured. And in that year, 62 infants were captured, and they were sent to the USA in a project that was called Jumbolea. I'm sure a lot of people have heard of that one, the Jumbolea. And they were sold into various zoos and circuses, which some of them are still, you know, in those zoos and circuses. There's a very famous elephant called Nosy. She's in the United States. She was taken in Zimbabwe in 1983. She's still alive, but recently she
wow.
was rescued to a sanctuary. She was.
Mm-hmm.
She did. Her life has been a tragic, tragic life because she was used in, you know, in circuses and the abuse that goes on in circuses. Like when you see animals in circuses, there's a lot of torture. There's a lot of abuse that goes on behind the scenes that people don't realize is happening. For a wild animal to be able to perform in a circus, people should be asking themselves, how do they get to perform in a circus like that? There's a lot of torture. There's a lot of abuse behind the scenes. So with Nosy, she was in a circus, and you know, luckily there's been a lot of people who, you know, been fighting for her to be released, and she's in a sanctuary at the moment. But as I said, her life has been a tragic one, and she was being used to give rides to people. You know, so, you know, when people, when tourists go for their holidays and they
mm-hmm.
take pictures, selfies on an elephant, that is not right. That is very wrong. People shouldn't be riding elephants because, like I was saying, a lot of torture, a lot of abuse, a lot of, they are deprived of sleep. They are not given proper medical care. So for people to actually take selfies and be happy and be taking pictures, riding an elephant, that shouldn't be allowed at all because there's a lot of torture that goes on.
Yes.
That goes on with that. Yeah, that goes on with that, and it needs to stop. So with the babies, for me, basically with the baby elephants, my fight, my campaign with the baby elephants is like Margaret was saying, you can't sort of snatch or rip off a baby from its mother because elephants, if people know how elephants behave, how they are like. They are very family-oriented. And everybody in the family feels if one member is taken away, that impacts the whole head.
Yes.
So when people say, oh, you know, elephants are killing us, there's human-wildlife conflict, it's the case is that's one of the main problems where you go into the wild, you capture baby elephants. When the mothers or the head sees human beings, they're going to react because they don't trust human beings anymore. Because whenever they see human beings, they think you're there to capture their babies.
Capture,
so they will
yes.
do anything
mm-hmm.
to yes. So they will think you're there to capture the babies. So they will do anything to protect themselves, to protect the head. That's why, for me, I always believe, you know, elephants don't kill people. People get themselves killed by elephants.
Mm. That's interesting.
Yeah, people get
You're listening to Zambia?
Yeah, people,
yes.
Elephants don't
yeah.
kill people.
Nathan?
Most animals actually it's believed that when they only attack or when they are provoked or something. We're going to take some questions from some of our colleagues who have called in. They've indicated that they would like to ask questions. You are listening to Zambia Block Talk Radio. This morning we are honored and privileged to be speaking to Margaret Buta. We all know she served as Councillor of North Richland Ward from 2014 to 2018, and we also have Ms. Norm Sadube. They are both wildlife conservationists and Zimbabwe calf elephant advocates. Bianchi, good morning. You have a question?
Good morning, Nathan. How are you and your guests?
Good.
Yes,
we're
good,
doing
good
fine.
Morning. Thank you.
We are fired.
You know, this is a good topic. You know, in the 1904 World Fair, they had Congolese people in cages on display. And of course, we know the story of Sarge Bartman, the Hottentot lady from South Africa that was also carried around the world and was on display. Well, Nathan, I have mentioned several times that I would stop if I had the control in some African country. I would stop giving my animals away, selling my animals. If you want to see African animals, come to Africa and see them. Come on a tour. Mm-hmm. Come on a safari, if you want to call it that, and look at them there. That would spur the business there in the country. Can you imagine them picking up the pyramids and letting them be on display in New York or Chicago?
Egypt
makes billions of dollars. I spent a lot of time in that country, differently, 8 to 9 years, going in and out of tomb temples and pyramids and on dig sites. But no, that's a precious thing that Africa has, Zambia, Zimbabwe. And let's build, put emphasis in building your own tourist agency, so that it can be on display if people come and pay.
That's true. Thank you, Bianchi. Norma,
thank you.
Ms. Margaret, you wanted to respond?
That's a very important point that you made, because what I wanted to say as well, these baby elephants are being sold for $40,000 or fetching up to $60,000. It's not worth the long-term value that you would get out of that elephant being left alone to be in the wild. Yeah? So it's not worth the long-term value at all, because that is a one-off sale. That money goes. It doesn't even reach the communities. It doesn't reach the people it's supposed to reach. It stays at the top or goes into whatever. You don't know what people do with that money. They go clothes shopping, designer shoes, designer this, designer that. It's gone. The lifespan of that elephant is longer than that unvaluable product that has been bought from selling that baby elephant.
$40,000. That's very
true. It's nothing.
Compared to the value and
the long-term value.
Yeah, it's true.
Yes,
Roger,
Nathan,
you just came back. Norm, sorry, you wanted to say something?
Could you repeat that, please, Nathan?
Yes. Oh, I thought you wanted to contribute to make a point on what we are talking about here.
I definitely agree with the caller. Like, you know, when he says, if you want to see wildlife, come to Africa and see them in the wild. That's where they thrive, in the wild. Because when people go to zoos to see elephants or any other wildlife, that's not an animal that you're seeing in a zoo. That's just a tragedy that you're seeing in a zoo. Because in a zoo, what you're just seeing is just a shell. But if you want to see how wild animals behave properly when they're in their natural habitat in the wild, so I definitely agree with what the caller said. If you want to see elephants, go to Africa, go to different countries in Africa, and then you can see them out in the wild, in their home, in the wild, not in a zoo.
I like that point, Norma. How animals behave, you know? It's like, I've been to the zoo and I've seen animals in the wild. Two totally different scenarios. Margaret, before you come in, I want to put my friend on the spot here. Roger, you just came back from Zambia. I know you drove across the country at a great extent. Did you get to see any animals?
No, but I saw a lot of beautiful Zambia, especially this time of the year.
Yes, the natural habitat, Roger. Uh-huh.
Yes, so when you were discussing these questions about our locals appreciating wildlife, I was asking myself, did it have to take me 20 years to live in diaspora to come back home and look at the trees and just marvel, just the beauty, appreciate it? If it did, then I'm like, we have no wildlife to remain, because three-quarters of our people have never experienced what I've experienced living in diaspora, in the prairies where there are no trees. And therefore, when I come back, I have more appreciation for trees. I have more appreciation for nature. And my question was, how do we help our people? see the beauty we see when we come from abroad. Kilometer after kilometer, Nathan, you see charcoal. You see charcoal in bags, you know.
Heaps
10,
heaps
40, 50. Mm. Those are trees gone. And I'm like, how are we going to preserve or conserve our trees? And that goes to what we are talking about here. Be it elephant, be it antelope, how are we going to do it? And I guess that's a question the ladies here can hear their passion, which we should do with is what is going to be our action plan. Number one, so that the people can see what we are seeing. I don't know. They've talked about, education. I liked the involvement of communities. We are going to need quite a bit of, even money to go into this. But I would like to hear what the action plan should be. Because very few of us live here in diaspora. And when we go back home, it is much easier to appreciate wildlife. But for the people, the majority who remain there, they're careless. Not that they're careless. But maybe because of lack of exposure, they don't have it in them to preserve. They don't have it. The last time I think we discussed this issue on this radio, we talked about the issue of poverty. Can a villager in Kasempa look at an animal, I want to preserve it so that when a tourist comes to see it, I can benefit today and tomorrow, or they just want to go and eat there and then? Us to fight that battle, it will take quite a while.
But Roger, your point is really important, and it's actually quite nice that you went back home from the diaspora and appreciated the environment. And also, that will give you the responsibility of now going to Zambia and starting to see how you can help to start planting trees or raise the funding from the diaspora. That's why you are there. So take that upon yourself, because right now you have woken up to say, look, this is wrong, what is happening to trees being destroyed and they are not being replaced, because what is being destroyed with the trees can actually be replaced. Tree planting can go on. You know, and as for action points, actually governments are also responsible to do action points concerning how they harness this for the communities and local people. I was consulted recently by National Democratic Congress to write their wildlife manifesto policy. When that comes out and when they use that, they can actually change their communities, change the people's point of view. They can use it. But that will be up to them, because it is part of their manifesto in whichever way, capacity, as opposition or as people in power, it doesn't matter. That's where we haven't seen so much of that being highlighted in African governments, and I think that is something that is very important. So I cannot really give away the action points in what you can take, because I have this responsibility to write this. So that will be up to them to now bring it out and say, we can help our people in this way. It is different. It is an inclusive policy, because I have researched, and I'm grateful for the people in my journey in wildlife conservation, people who have been in high-level positions, who in the last year and a half have been feeding me with a lot of knowledge that they know, putting out their reports, their op-eds. I've been reading diligently. And one of the most important things is also for Africans to start reading. Do your research. Look at it. Take that responsibility upon yourself. You cannot just be spoon-fed something. The information is there. Even how to set up the systems to get into wildlife conservation and tourism, it is there. It is out there. Nobody's holding it back. I mean, all these people in high-level positions who have been there, done that, and they have the experience, are giving that information out right now. They're sharing it. So we have to take it and run with it. Mm. And those are things, you know, Roger, just take time out. Things are there to research, to see what you can do. And Roger, I don't know you, but one day I want to see that you actually took a part of the territory in Zambia and planted trees. That would be fantastic. I would
I like
love
that.
To be part of that.
I like that, yeah.
Yeah,
also
that's
to
good.
Add on as well, to add on to what Roger was asking, like how do we sort of tackle this issue? I think it goes to my point where I mentioned earlier, the grassroots education. We need to, that's where we need to start from. We need to start from local communities, grassroots education, so educating the local communities, getting them involved, making them feel valued, making them feel valued. And the other thing, main thing as well that's lacking, in especially in Zimbabwe, is the political willpower when it comes to wildlife. It's the political willpower. As much as we don't like to sort of put the two together, wildlife and politics, they are intertwined. They are totally intertwined. So if there's no political willpower from up at the top, then, you know, the local communities won't do their part. So we need the government, you know, the Zimbabwean government, to actually have the political willpower to say, you know, this is what we need to do. We need to stop, you know, this trade. Because as it is, as it is now, because when with what happened, like Margaret was saying earlier, in 1997, they decided to move the Zimbabwean elephants to CIATES Appendix 2, which that's how they are able to trade them legally. They are able to trade them. But elephants belong in Appendix 1. They are endangered and they belong in Appendix 1. So in Appendix 1, you can't trade. There's no trade allowed in Appendix 1. So what we're asking the Zimbabwean government is to move Zimbabwean elephants from Appendix 2 back onto Appendix 1. And then if they have the political willpower to do that, then all this will stop and people actually start getting involved and learning a lot more about wildlife and how to the importance of wildlife, educating kids when they're growing up in schools. So it's the political willpower that's lacking at the moment.
Excellent. So who has the authority? Who is really responsible for classifying the animals in any particular country? Let's take Zimbabwe. Who moved the elephants from that appendix to another appendix, Norma?
Actually, I can answer that, Nathan, because it's not the Zimbabwean authorities that would have to move that from that appendix. The Convention on International Trade in Endangered Species of Wild Fauna and Flora is based in Geneva. They're a convention, and they have countries that participate, and they are signatory countries. So what can happen is at their next meeting, they can put it as an agenda item to look at it and vote on it to say that this trade in live elephants should be moved, Zimbabwean live elephants should be moved back to Appendix 1. They have the power to vote on it and move it back to Appendix 1.
What can we do, Margaret? Can we push for them to put this on the agenda? How can we advocate? How can we push for this to be?
By raising our voices, the way we are raising our voices, even if it's not on that agenda, Appendix 1, President Mnangagwa has the power to stop the trade in live baby elephants. He is the president. He has that ultimate power to say no. It's his responsibility. He is the representative of the people of Zimbabwe, and that includes all its natural resources as well. He has that political remit. He has that power. He is the public servant of Zimbabwe. Politicians are put there to make a difference. He can make a difference.
That's right. Yeah,
he can speak to his cabinet. Come up with a solution. And as Norma has
awareness,
she's done a fantastic job. Yes.
No political will. Like Norma said, no political will. Mm-hmm.
You know, Zimbabweans and others, Zambians in the diaspora, can work very, very diligent to help build the tourist industry there in those countries. You know, as far as building the accommodations in different cities, have tour buses. Mm. It would even spur on a commute airline because people would not want to sit and drove from one site to the other, especially if they're far off. I've watched people go to Washington State here in the United States, spend $50 a person for a 2-week ride on the boat to get to the North Pole where they can stand at the top of the world and just say they've done it. So people would enjoy making these tours, but we have to put the accommodation where you can control the industry yourself and you can save the elephants and other animals too.
That's true. Let's get a comment from Rachisewe, and then we'll conclude our discussion with the visit the ladies made to the Zimbabwean embassy in London. Rachisewe, go ahead.
Thank you, Vanessa, and I would like to thank you, our friends from the United Kingdom, for joining us this morning and bringing up this issue, which is very informative. And my comment is going to go toward Pianki, what he said about people that should go back to Africa and visit the animals. And I know you guys are going to get tired of hearing this to me, but I'm not going to stop beating the drum. Before independence, the game parks, they were run, you know, it was a good place to go. And something has gone wrong, and we need to, people like the guys from United Kingdom, we need to start confronting the politicians and make sure that, you know, just like when it comes to this elephant, the reason that the baby elephants are getting away from Africa is because they need money. And before independence, there was a lot of fish that was introduced to the streams. You'll be surprised, even the plants, those who are Bemba speaking people, you know, that tree is very nutrition trees to the animals, you know, but it did not come from Zambians. It came from our friends because they cared about the trees. And we had another person, he's a Zambian, but from white descendant. He was talking about how much we are blessed with natural resources, the grass, the plants and stuff like that, you know. California right now, elephant grass is not indigenous to California. But California is doing research on elephant grass. And someday we'll buy elephant grass from California. And for those who have grown up in Zambia, we know that elephant grass, we used to pray in elephant grass, hiding in there. But that grass
Kasante,
you know.
Yama, let me stop you there. We're going to have a moment at in our second segment where we're going to talk about this in what? We have a few minutes remaining here. We'll need to conclude our discussion, drop, and then reconnect and connect the guy from Lusaka. Let me ask this final question. Norma, you went to the Zimbabwe High Commission in London, delivered a letter for the President of Zimbabwe. Talk to us about that. Where do things stand now, and how did that go?
Well, at the moment, I went to drop off a letter. At the moment, we still haven't had any response, either from the President or the Ambassador, because what I did when we did a protest in June, this year in June, outside of the Zimbabwean embassy, we did a protest about the Zimbabwe, the trade. And what happened, I dropped off a letter that I had addressed to the president. And up to now, this is in June, up to now, no response, no acknowledgement from the president or the ambassador on the letter. And then we did another protest about 2 weeks ago, outside the Zimbabwean embassy as well. And we were quite loud. And the following couple of days after that, we dropped off another letter again, me and Margaret. We dropped a letter, but we didn't, we still haven't, and we requested for a meeting with the ambassador. So we still haven't had anything as yet. So that's where we stand now in terms of, like, communication. There is no acknowledgement from the other party, like from either the president or from the ambassador at the moment. So that's where we are at the moment.
But
somebody
just
who's listening
to
this,
Nathan, I can assure you.
Just a moment,
that they
Margaret. Okay, just a moment. If somebody listening to this in Australia, in Russia, Zambia, even in Zambia, even in Zimbabwe, South Africa, wherever there is abuse of this, somebody listening to this in the United States and they are saying, how can I get involved? What should I do?
Well, they have to get in touch with Noma because she is the one who has been an advocate and started this for Zimbabwe Baby Elephants. And yes, and also just a point before I she'll give the details herself. I just wanted to say that actually the president has seen the letter and the ambassador, because when we took the letter to the Zimbabwean embassy in London, I made sure that I spoke to, we spoke to somebody. She was very welcoming, and I made sure that she took that letter upstairs before we left, and they had a look at it. They were aware, and they told us their procedure, what to do to make sure that it gets to the president. So what happens after it is sent by the ambassador in the diplomatic pouch to the office of the president in Zimbabwe is up to the people in the office of the president and what they do with the letter, because I can assure even the listeners that that letter has been seen and it has gone through the right circles, because I knew how to approach the diplomatic way, because my mother was a diplomat. So I know that they have seen it and they have done the right thing. They would not hold on to it because they told us the right procedure to do.
Norma, how do people get in touch with you?
So Norma can now tell you herself. Well, they can get in touch with me, margaret.buta@gmail.com, or they can get in touch with Norma. It's normadube@gmail.com, or she is on Facebook as well, and on Twitter she has that presence. Yeah, so that's how they can get in touch. And also through my Twitter account, email, I get a lot of DMs. I get messages as well. They do come through with people who are interested in wildlife conservation. And as for the Americans listening who really want to get into it and start doing the business, your previous caller said something so interesting. It's time for people to start coming to see our wildlife from America. Instead of all the trophy hunters that we get coming in from America, it would be fantastic. And please get in touch, and we can find a way and a solution in how people can start coming in to see the wildlife instead of the trophy hunting that goes out of Africa. Because there is a lot that is going on. I mean, if you, the figures are horrendous anyway, but there is nothing that cannot be changed. Yeah?
Thank you, ladies.
So that's fantastic.
Thank you for taking the time. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Norma.
Thank you. The other thing, where, how people can get in touch as well, is by Twitter or Facebook. If they just do hashtag, if they do hashtag Zimbabwe Elephants, or hashtag Zim Wild Trade, then they will be able to follow the conversation and sort
the
of like then they can that way. Yes, so if they do,
excellent.
If they just do like on Facebook, on Twitter, if they just do hashtag Zimbabwe Elephants or hashtag Zim Wild Trade, then they will be able to get in touch with me through there. And I've got some callers from the here in the UK. They've been trying to call in, but they can't get through.
Oh, sorry. I wish we should have mentioned. I'm sure they saw the number. We have to end here, and I'm sorry. Thank you for taking the time, everybody. We're going to drop and call back in as we go to Lusaka and speak to Chufya Tayali.
Thank you, Nathan.
Baby, wanna, my love for you, you never die, you never die. Viva, oh baby, viva. Baby, you too sweet, whatever. A baby dance to do, like what? Make a take to sleep, papa, like that. Viva, oh baby, viva.